And hello, everyone, and welcome to the HITECH Annual Report Workgroup. I'm Mike Berry. I'm with ONC, and we are very glad that you could join us today. I would like to welcome our chair, Erin Meary, along with our workgroup members, Brett Oliver and Stephen Lane. And we hope to have Jim Jurgis joining us shortly. I will now turn it over to Erin.
Hey, I'm
Oh, great. Thank you, Jim.
Thank you, Mike.
All right, let's get into it then. So welcome to the last day of January, which is always fun and interesting. So here we are getting in the thick of it and hopefully get to goal. Once again, I want to thank Michelle and the ONC team for the phenomenal work. And I think even we saw at the HITECH the other day, that we still got some good feedback, but really synthesized this pretty cleanly this year. So let's get this across the line. Let's get into it then. Next. So we're going to do, so opening remarks, discussion of the HITECH report, and then, of course, public comment, and then adjourn. All right. Next slide. All right. We're here. Pretty first meeting, and so really it's updating the draft with any feedback, last pertinent comments from the HITECH. I did see a few things come across from Mr. John Kansky and others. So a lot of folks reading the report, reading our work, commenting, adding to their two cents, and a lot of kudos to this team and the work that's been done. So next slide. All right, so we will take to the 17th February meeting, approval for the final HITECH annual report. I'll be honest, I always miss the days when we did this in person because I always thought these discussions on the final one to approve are always the most fun. So we'll do it virtually this time, of course, and get it to goal. And then of course, transmit this to Dr. Tripathi for his consideration to send onward as per the law. Next slide. All right, so again, we're gonna go through, look at the list of all the members' comments and any revisions, and then of course we'll present it for approval on the February 17th meeting, and then we'll try and be transmitting it shortly thereafter. Exciting time. Next slide. All right, let's go into it. Let's see the comments, the fun stuff.
Erin, do you want them to bring up the screen of comments?
Yes, yes, please.
We'll do that.
All right. Okay. As always, we have color-coded cells here to really help us keep the task and make sure we're oriented appropriately. So, first one comes from Hans around the health IT landscape, infrastructure landscape. Again, if it's sort of this green color, at least it's to me, maybe it's my eyesight or my screen calibration, sort of this light teal color, then ONC's looked at it and said it makes sense to some degree or another. We can consider it pretty much as is. But in this area for interoperability, Hans is commenting that he really wants to add the word access and exchange of information for research purposes. You see there in red, under the suggestion there, I think that's more of a semantics thing, but I think it's important because it is how we get to the data, right? So I don't see any issues there. Any issues with this group?
Nope, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Next one there, health IT infrastructure gaps, opportunities, et cetera. Again, from Hans, really appreciate him. He's so thoughtful in his comments here. It says, as written comment for future discussion, opportunities is record completeness, how to achieve complete minimum necessary record of a patient across data sources without compromise of de-identified data privacy when data cannot come together until after it starts to be aggregated across sources. ONC recommends placing this at the top of the list for the FY22 report. If I had to guess what Hans is alluding to, I don't know. I haven't spoken to him. This seems to be related to either synthetic data or some sort of granular consent, as best I can describe. What do you all think?
I mean, I think he's just getting at, you know, as it suggests, the notion of completeness. The question, of course, is you don't know what you don't know, so you never know what could be missing. But I think it is something that we should consider in the future, you know, how to assess completeness, you know, as we get into some of the PP2PI discussion on granular privacy restrictions, you know, there's the whole aspect of that, which is to say that, well, there's something we're not sending you. This is the type of data it is, but we're not going to tell you the data. We're just going to say there's some meds missing or there's a problem missing or something like that. I don't know if that is relevant here, but it certainly is the first thing that comes to my mind. I'm not sure how else you can get at record completeness.
EHI, defining EHI, right? You could say the DRS, all right, is an EHI element within the DRS. Again, let's stop using acronyms. The designated record set, right? What is that? What is electronic health information within that? Therefore, all those components could be another way. Jim?
I interpreted his comments more in the latter side, the across data sources, right? So we can have the designated record set, but if you have four places a patient's been and three of them are contributing records, but a fourth isn't, then you have an incomplete record. That's what I thought of that. Not that any given entity didn't designate their designated record set, but maybe it's both, Aaron.
So more that like you're aware that there's data available from a given source and you don't have it. So you might have it from an NRS, a National Record Locator Service, but you don't actually have the contents of those encounters or those results.
Well, let me give you a use case. Let's say that an organization now, in the course of seeing patients, is getting CCD or getting USCDI information back, right? And identifies that they have a relationship with the patient. The patient has a mild heart valve abnormality, and they have an operational campaign to make sure patients like that see a cardiologist. If our records were complete, then we'd have the confidence then that there's not already a cardiologist following the patient for that problem.
Mm.
But it may be that fourth site that isn't contributing information means that we have an incomplete national access to the full data set, and therefore bad decisions might be made.
Yeah, and I think that jives with what I was saying. Yeah. But you know, the only way to know that it's incomplete is to know, you know, have some indication that the results exist someplace, yeah, or data exists someplace, but that you don't have it. Yeah. Again, I think it is worth talking about probably for next year.
Brett, what do you think? I think Brett, you're trying to say something, right?
Yeah, no, I was going to agree with you. I think it's a matter of defining what each of those categories mean. And so that when you say that fourth organization, for instance, isn't contributing, what aren't they contributing? Right. And whether they've got it or not, we just know this is what you're supposed to be, or this is what is expected. Yeah.
Yeah. And I would say, do they even know what they're expected to contribute? Right. So as I'm going through this exercise with my organization, we're trying to define all the EHI elements to make sure we're in compliance for this October. It's amazing, even getting vendors to agree and understand what they should be contributing to the total sum of data to complete the record. So it's everything about a patient. There's so much variability. It's crazy right now.
Well, Aaron, to add to that, we're with you. I know Stephen Lane's group's doing it too. As we go through the possible EHI from the AHIMA and AMIA record, you know, many of us are going to be using the feasibility exception for some of those data elements. There may be a mosaic of differences between providers.
Right.
What is a feasibility exception? So you don't have the confidence that you're fully receiving everything because it's infeasible, et cetera. It's not complete yet, so you still can't make good decisions. A great example is of Health Gorilla. If you have a company who's looking for gaps in care, they're only going to be as accurate and precise with no false positives and negatives if they have the complete record. Otherwise, it'll look like there's a colonoscopy gap when in fact there was a colonoscopy, but the site that did it said it was infeasible.
Hmm.
Anyway.
No, I think it's it'll be an interesting area to drill down in.
All right, so we'll table that one then, Michelle. We will table that for the suggestions. But it's a good one. We really should look at that. All right, next idea here, or next feedback. We skip over, I'm sorry, there was a green
one. Bi-directional
comment. Just go back up so I can read it just quickly. There we go, yeah. So health IT infrastructure gaps opportunities. In public health, the comment is this is gap focused on data going back to the community, really about a bi-directional feed. And I think this kind of goes along with everything we've been saying, that it needs to be a two-way street versus a one-way street. And so he's really adding that red text there, bidirectional. I don't see an issue.
You know, I love Hans. He's brilliant. When I think about population reporting, I always think about it going one direction, you know, and I've been one of the most vocal champions for bidirectional public health data exchange, but I've always thought of it from the perspective of the individual patient. Like, I've got a patient, I want to know what public health knows about them. But the idea that even as an organization, you know, or an entity, I might have a population of patients and I want to know what public health knows about all of them. So the idea of being able to pull population or, you know, bulk level data from public health into, say, a provider, I think that's brilliant. And I've literally never heard that mentioned. So I think that's what Hans is getting at here.
It seems to be, yeah. Well, makes sense. Makes complete sense.
Hey, Steve, okay. Some of the discussions we have with CDC and the White House Task Force and stuff, when they asked for feedback, we said, look, we're spending a lot of time contributing info, but we'd like to actually benefit from the info, for example, during COVID, to know exactly what the status was in our city. And I think it may also be a response to that request.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, whether you're a provider, a payvider, a payer, you can imagine a lot of situations,
patient, right? I would say if you have a bidirectional, why couldn't a patient query a really informed?
Well, yeah,
patient,
yeah,
right?
No, absolutely. Yeah. But that's on the individual. But here, just thinking about this as population
absolutely.
Level data. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hopefully we're not going to have patients pulling down their neighbors.
You never know. There's some sophisticated patients these days.
All right. On to Mr. Kansky.
Well, yeah, hold on one second here. So Brett, are you good with this one?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. 100%.
Okay, perfect. All right.
Aaron, you're the best. get all the voices.
I gotta get all the voices. That's
when,
the goal.
You've only
all
got
right.
three of us. You can do that, right?
I can absolutely. All right. So, all right. Health IT infrastructure gaps, target area public health. Mr. Kansky, comment here is focused on background. The written principle behind principle proposed agreements is that there's general agreement that inadequacies in public health infrastructure. Okay. HITECH should help explore the options and inform stakeholding agencies with at least recommendations. So it has multiple approaches here. Option one, CDC, federal government would create a top-down infrastructure. He's saying, please no. Option two, the existing nationwide infrastructure of installed EHRs should be the basis of nationwide public health reporting. And then option three, statewide health data utilities, HIEs, okay, that survey aggregates of data from EHRs should exist in each state and be the basis of nationwide public health reporting. That would be a little difficult considering the variation of data matching and data calibration between states. And he says, really, so what the recommendation from ONC is, we should discuss along with the recommendations for additional opportunities and recommended HITECH activities that follow. So these three or others or some combination of such, right? Generally is we need to start figuring out what the rules of the road are is what I'm reading into this from Mr. Kansky I don't want to say the accrediting agency, that's terrible words, but what is the oversight group to help us develop that? I think that's what he's trying to ask here.
Well, I think there's a little bit more to it than that. It's interesting how these are presented as distinct options, suggesting that one might be choosing between them. But I think, in my opinion, the way he phrases option three suggests, as I know John, you know, I think thinks is a good idea, that every single state should have a designated health data utility, that they either can or must leverage to support this public health interoperability. And I think that there are a lot of ways that there are a lot of opinions about that, you know, whether that's something that should be supported in those states, regions where it exists and has been proven to be functional, whether it's something that should be required. I know in my state, there's a handful of folks who are trying to force everybody to drive their data through a regional HIE instead of directly to the state where that can be done. So, I mean, I agree that there are a number of options, you know, that could be used here. I also agree that we should support the use of various options where they are fruitful. But I think that there's a lot of devil in these details. And I stop short of feeling that we are in a position to require this in every corner of the land simply because we don't have, you know, partners in those positions that we could really always rely on.
Yeah, no, good point. Jim?
Yeah, one question I had about this, it was I'm not sure what the difference between option two and option three is. If you look at TEFCA and if you have a QHIN, because one of the things we suggested was use the existing infrastructure of TEFCA and USCDI. And one notion could be that you have a QHIN that's dedicated to public health. That doesn't mean that state HIEs can't be participants or HINs, right? And so to me, I'm trying to figure out, is the comment here, to me, bad would be that we create a whole different system and don't leverage what else is happening in the country. So is the question here, does HITECH provide guidance and recommendations for adhering to the public already being built? What's the question?
Yeah, typically what we do is we try to basically double click, right? And say, what's here, right? What are the ingredients that go into the sausage? And then from that, it eventually derives into a work group to really go double click on it. Or we come up with recommendations as to an approach. I don't know what our authority is in going beyond that, more than an investigative and figuring out and saying what the bugaboos are, potential barriers. You know, what I'm curious on, Michelle, and maybe you can help elaborate on the comment, we have done a lot of this, saying we need to do listening sessions and more with the NCVHS and other groups to learn more, which seems to be kind of in line with what John's recommending we do. Were we missing something? Because it seemed like we were on the path to eventually get to an approach. We just don't even know what the approach is yet.
So part of your answer might be in his comments that came right after this one, where he actually wrote up a couple opportunities and asked for us to include them in this topic.
Okay.
And then Matt, and they were partly to support the existing activities.
Well, before we go to those, I'll just, in response to your comment, Jim, I think what he's getting at in option two is really the currently existing infrastructure. I think he's talking about, you know, V2 interfaces, ECR via direct, you know, use of, you know, the eHealth Exchange hub. In his option two, you know, leveraging, you know, transport of data directly from the EHRs into public health. And I think he's differentiating that from option three, where you've got this designated intermediary where those EHRs are sending to an HIE. But as you say, you know, it could be to a QHIN as well that is designated to then transmit that data on to public health. So that's just how I read it.
I agree. And what John's saying in his last sentence, right above the multiple approaches quote, is that HITECH should help explore the options and inform stakeholders with education about the pros and cons of each approach or something. Mm-hmm. That sounds like a reasonable, you know.
Once we understand it, we can communicate it, right?
I mean,
right. Yeah. Brett, you're saying something?
No, I just say clearly John wasn't saying these are the three ways to go or pick one. You know, he was just giving some examples. I think more than anything to get the conversation going. Yeah. I don't hear this as much. I don't hear as much talk about what infrastructure do we need, and mandate's not the right word, but recommend what floor is there? Because there's nothing more frustrating than being mandated to report data that's not bidirectional or that you don't have the capability of doing, or you do, but your state agency can't receive it, which was.
Well, and if you look at the 2022 CMS fee schedule, right, it requires public health data to be sent in now, right? To some degree, right? And it's not robust. It's not a huge record set. It is the beginnings of something, right? So. Yeah. What does that eventually start opening the door to? We don't know, right? So TBD and the quality of that data, TBD, right? I don't know how some rural hospital is going to pick up on something very highly, you know, some genomic surveillance data that's really highly needed. I don't know, well, TBD on a lot of this stuff. Well, but I think, go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, go ahead.
Oh yeah, what I was going to say is a part of the feedback that we gave to CDC and others in this space was this notion of every state trying to do it their own way and differently, right? And that, but there are some core things like defining a data set. You know, what are the standard methodologies? One of the strong
defining acceptable transport methods, right?
Well, one of the things we said was it shouldn't be a many to many. every single provider was trying to figure out how to get to every single state their data, there ought to be a trusted intermediary. That doesn't necessarily mean it's an entity. It could be a set of transactions that are defined enough that every single state is focusing on the same data definitions, and are sharing it bidirectionally in the same manner. That's going to require, I don't think we're going to get there by consensus without some facilitated governmental role. And that's high tech, it seems.
Plus, yeah, well, and certainly we've been discussing, you know, the opportunity for ONC to wade into the pool of specifying minimum standards for public health exchange, potentially certifying public health data systems. I mean, I certainly hope that that's going to be seriously considered in the future. One thing that strikes me in John's last bullet, or the second bullet here on page 3 at the top, is he says improve bidirectional interoperability between public health and HIEs. And here again, kind of similar to my comment earlier about population data from public health, you know, back to stakeholders. I don't know that there are many HIEs that are receiving data from public health, except insofar as they might be facilitating bidirectional exchange to a, you know, controlled substance system or something like that. So I am curious what he's thinking. Like, should a regional HIE like his, for example, be able to query public health on their own, not at the behest of an HIE member, but on just as the HIE to query data and pull it into their system? That, again, that's a novel concept for me.
Well, Stephen, I think that's the future, because if I see what's happening here is what we're trying to do is reduce the cost of defining, managing, and making the data available, right? Many noun HIEs, as you know, most of their value is creating this one record, right? And they, and if they want to employ, you know, they have to do some mapping if they want to do anything with it. I think in the future, the data itself is going to be increasingly usable and fluid, and many of these HIEs are going to have to pivot to what business value they provide. And therefore, it needs to be bidirectional, because they're going to need access to data in an appropriate manner so they can determine how to best serve their communities well.
Okay.
They'll shift. Their purpose will shift from aggregators to users of the data.
So we look at this next comment, which Michelle said would inform the previous comment, which I think is a smart thing. I'm reading it here. Again, also from Mr. Kansky. It kind of starts illuminating what we were speculating here, right? So, you know, opportunities proposed by John Kansky, one, help relevant federal agencies like the CDC, CMS, and others, you know, by exploring and sharing findings and approaches to achieving that national public health reporting, improve bidirectional interoperability. Exactly what you were saying, Stephen, you know, public health data systems could leverage existing or potential data flows from EHRs and others for testing, such as vaccination status, et cetera, back to the providers via the HIE. So again, I think what John is pointing towards is exactly what we've been talking about. What don't we know, right? What don't we know to inform an approach to do something like this? I believe that's what he's saying. Thoughts?
I agree. I think identifying the gap and the opportunities as a focused work effort around HIEs, again, potentially leading to some recommendations or even requirements for, you know, what it is that they should be able to do and how.
And if you even look at that next one under there, same thing, right? Explore different approaches being considered for national public health data infrastructure, e.g. a federal top-down decision-making, leveraging EHRs, HIE, same, right? Same thing, another approach. One begins to think, is this a specified work group, right? Looking at this, I don't know if it's a subgroup of the TEFCA work group that's focused on public health data reporting. I don't know, but it's very interesting. John has a great point. We do need to put some meat on this.
I don't think there's any question that there needs to be a work group, and it should have representation from the TEFCA team, from the, right, you know, from high tech, you know, potentially from our interoperability standards work group, and certainly from the CDC, ONC, you know, public health data system, you know, modernization group. I would hope that we wouldn't have multiple groups, you know, trying to find, you know, this elephant's belly button. You know, we've got to bring all the interested parties together to do this.
Yeah, got it, Brett.
No, I was going to say before you made that recommendation that it really feels big enough for a work group, and I like Stephen's idea of bringing existing work group members together. But if we don't do it, the individual states are going to, you know, get further and further away from each other down different paths, making it more difficult, you know, to bring everybody together.
Yep. Okay. So I think Michelle's recommendation on these three, if we bucket them, is we agree with John that there needs to be some urgency and some focused effort on this. And I think some of the recommendations we've already made in the report work group support them. And maybe we call attention to it saying, you know, we want a more focused effort, learning, potential work group, whatever else, to get to a synthesized recommended course of action.
Does that make sense? In the past, you steered us away from naming task forces and think of sort of like an ONC decision. But I think getting to the activity of what is it you want to come out of the task force?
That's
focused effort of some sort, right? Some focused
and collaborative. That would be the other thing.
Yep.
Collaborative with all the agencies, you know, that have an interest in this.
Yep.
So if you look at the activity that's in the line second from the bottom of that page, from John Kansky, is what language would you change there from his?
Explore different approaches. No, I just say explore different collaborative approaches. I think I like Stephen's word there.
Okay. Decision maker is my word because he didn't have like a noun in there to make it parallel with the other two. So that was my contribution. Okay. But if you have a different word, that's fine.
Yep. Good. All right.
Well, and it says leveraging EHRs. I mean, obviously this is going to leverage EHRs. But I guess the question is, it's EHRs and federated interoperability solutions.
You say existing systems.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Be more inclusive.
Because again, when he says HIEs, he's using it as a noun, and you know, that's a very specific technology solution.
Yeah. So leveraging EHRs, comma, existing health IT systems, comma, that sort of thing.
Oh, and do we also think that the only hesitation with the word existing, Aaron, is there may be things that come on the other side of the fire, interfaces, entities that, like the Health Gorilla, you know, that are aggregators that become QHINs? I'm wondering if it's more than just existing. Maybe it's empowering EHRs, HIEs, and other technology providers that utilize interoperability, something like that.
I like that.
That's fine. Yeah, that's a fair point. That's a fair point. Mm-hmm. That's a fair point.
Right. Some of this could be done by QHINs, independent of existing HIEs.
Perhaps.
Right.
All right.
Okay, back to Hans.
Yeah, all right. Let's go down, please. All right, here we go. So opportunity of public health data, recommended high-tech activity. So Hans is saying, proposed guidance for operationalizing standards for addressing implementation variation of public health data access and exchange. It's just access and exchange, right? Versus public health data exchange. Again, it's kind of similar to his theme of his earlier comment, which I appreciate.
Right. They should be able to access our data, clinical systems, and vice versa.
Yeah, this makes sense to me. Any objections? Okay. Good with next.
Of note, we're covering access and exchange, but not use. You know, we're not suggesting that high tech really has anything to say about how public health is using the data that they access and exchange, which I think is which is appropriate, right? It's not our place.
Right. That's right. Okay, next section here, Mr. Steve Eichner, Mr. Texas representative here. All right.
He gave away in a recent email that he sometimes goes by the nickname of Ike.
Which I like that. like the president. I love it.
But he and I have agreed that in meetings he's going to be Steve and I'm going to be Steven, just so we can try to keep that straight.
Okay, that's good. That's really good. I know we have two Aarons now, so yeah.
Well, you guys are up a creek.
We're done. Yeah, I know. All right. So we got public health data. Let's see here. Recommended high tech activity, provide guidance for operational standards. His comment there is revision to proposal and see provide guidance for policies and operationalizing standards to address implementation variation of public health data access and exchange.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful. And I think that goes to what Arian keeps raising, you know, is that the policy levers are huge. He says operationalizing guidance for policies and
operationalizing.
Now, is that guidance for operationalizing the standards? I think so. Yeah, just trying to work through the sentence structure here.
Yeah, so it's policies.
You probably need another word in there. So it'd be guidance for policies and for operationalizing standards.
Can you put two fours in a sentence like that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's okay, parallel structure.
I don't know, Michelle, keep us honest.
Guidance for this and guidance for that.
You've got one engineer and three doctors. You're the goober here, Michelle.
It was a problematic structure, and I think the change improves it, so thank you.
Okay, all right. So we're good then there. All right. Well, then I think this is fine.
Yeah, yeah, I think it's a subtle improvement. Subtle yet meaningful. Yeah. Clem.
Oh, wait. Clem, any heartburn or good?
No, good. I think it belongs back in that bucket of
all right. This
maybe work group that we suggest.
Right. Yeah, I got your hand raised, sir.
Do it.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. I'm waiting for the Clem one.
Oh, okay. Oh, you went right to it.
Well, I was just going to say, it is interesting that there's overlap, but probably some difference between these discussions of public health and the discussions of HIEs. There's clearly an overlap because the HIEs, you know, do have shown real value in supporting public health exchange. But I think that there's, as I've said repeatedly, I think there may be an opportunity for ONC to provide guidance and or certification or requirements for public health data systems. And there may be similar opportunities for them to provide guidance and or certification for HIE data systems. And mm-hmm. they're not the same thing, obviously. Those are kind of mm-hmm. different.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it's Clem. All right. So we had recommended convene a listening session to better understand barriers. He expressed concern. Okay, so his concern here is with our comments earlier about the minimum necessary data sets. He said expressed concern about focus on minimum necessary is what constitutes minimum necessary can be tricky to determine in public health. In addition, it can lead to all free text information being excluded, which may omit important public health information. I'm not totally understanding that, but okay. Revision proposed by ONC, convene a listening session to better understand barriers to sharing clinical data sets with public health authorities.
Yeah, comment there. So the way things are working right now with USCDI and Commonwealth, for example, is it's pretty much the entire package we get, right?
Yeah.
That can't happen in public health. So I disagree with them a little, because I think that there's a definition of what data is relevant for public health. And what I understood is that the challenges were about how to actually deal with the minimum defining and executing on the minimum necessary data, right? Because right now, if you were to use the exchanges and the existing TEFCA infrastructure model, you might get far more than just minimally necessary that's transmitted. And I interpreted this as it being really important to understand the challenges with limiting a data set. Right.
Yeah, I think the issue here is really that HIPAA specifies that when exchanging data with public health for non-treatment purposes, that you must adhere to minimum necessary. You know, and I think it's a fairly short reference in HIPAA. So if public health is, you know, if they're public health nurses or public health clinics or a public health hospital or, you know, that's treatment and you don't have to worry about minimum necessary. But as soon as they're doing, you know, case investigation or epidemiologic intelligence or, you know, the other kinds of things that they do, then we are stuck per HIPAA with a minimum necessary restriction on the providers. So I think Clem's point, and I'm not sure it's well-founded, is that he is appropriately concerned that there would be a loss of data completeness if we couldn't share notes, you know, because obviously lots of critical information is inside of notes and not only in discrete data elements. But again, I mean, it's not that notes are inherently in or out when you're talking about minimum necessary. You know, I mean, if you're doing epidemiologic intelligence, I mean, notes may be in. I mean, all you need is for the public health entity to declare that what the data that they're asking for is minimum necessary. I mean, we've been having this conversation for 2 years now. And our hope is that there will be something coming out of OCR to help to clarify that. But, you know, on the counter argument is that, you know, many members of the public are, you know, understandably anxious about too much of their personal data being reported to the government, right? I mean, there's this inherent, you know, governmental anxiety in the US. So that's where this minimum necessary comes from. I mean, nobody's saying that public health shouldn't get the data they need to do whatever it is that they say they're doing, but we just don't want to send them excessive data or unnecessary data
And we don't
for these non-treatment purposes.
Right. I am looking at, though, the revision proposed by ONC saying clinical and striking minimum necessary to sharing clinical data sets with public health authorities. I can see the merit in that, and that we wouldn't be automatically jumping to the conclusion, I think what you're alluding to, Stephen, that, well, we want to follow HIPAA. Well, maybe there are certain circumstances where you HIPAA allows for, right? Or there's a PHE that allows us to do it or whatever else. So I can appreciate that.
I read minimum necessary as the minimum necessary for the problem that public health has on their hands right there. If you take that out and you leave just clinical data sets, then that's a wide open door that I honestly disagree with. I don't think that's a good idea at all.
Yeah, I agree with Brett.
I concur, and I would add it's a very legitimate concern that the public would not just want too much information shared. Let me flip it. If I'm a public health department, I don't want entire tomes of data I'm not going to use to be sent to me. I want it perfect, purpose specific, right?
Right. So what if we said to sharing clinical data sets with respect to HIPAA or guidelines or something to that effect? So we are embracing the notion of there may be other clinical elements that, depending on the circumstance, are shared, but we're being mindful of HIPAA.
Could a word be, to fix all this, be convene a listening session to better understand barriers to sharing the appropriate clinical data sets with public health? Because appropriate gets to...
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, that's what I'm trying to say.
How about appropriate and compliant?
Okay, could do that.
I mean, I don't know. I think the way it's worded presently is okay. I don't frankly think that, I love CLEM, but I don't think that either the addition of the word clinical or the striking of minimum necessary adds clarity to this. I mean, I really do think this was to get at how can we, you know, deal with this HIPAA requirement, which most of us feel is reasonable, in a way that also supports public health and getting the data that they need. You know, this really came up early pandemic, you know, when we spun up a new policy within care equality to say that public health could request a standard CCD so long as they declared that that was the minimum necessary for the work that they were doing on case investigation. And that policy passed and nobody ever took advantage of it. I'm not aware of any public health entity that did that, that in every case that I was aware of, they worked with, you know, EHR vendors and others to define what is the minimum necessary data they need, whether it was in the electronic initial case report or some bespoke document type that they spun up in New York or another place in Chicago. And that was, you know, their declaration of this was the minimum necessary that we needed. Those were not scalable solutions because, again, they were very bespoke and the requirements of an individual state or region, in some cases, a city. So I think the way we had it phrased initially is okay. And I really appreciate Clem's concern, but I don't think it's a well-founded concern. I don't think the fact that stuff is in a note necessarily means it's going to be lost forever.
Well, I concur, and I'd be a little stronger to state that I think it would be, not only is it okay the way the wording was, but it will detract from it to even use my wording, because this links it to the HIPAA requirement. And that's by removing minimally necessary, it's removing the heart of this whole set piece here. And that is, you know, there's a HIPAA obligation to be minimally necessary. So
let me just push back a little bit here, because I'll say it from the Academic Medical Center perspective. In my prior life, there was a component of FERPA, right, that also had to be compliant with. In order to get some of this data that I had to share for immunization registries and whatever else, there was different levels of rigor and different levels of access allowed for FERPA than it was for via HIPAA, right? And different folks could access student records and certain sections of student records, which should intersect with their medical record to some degree or another, right? So if they were both a patient as well as a student. So it becomes murky if we focus only on HIPAA, but the compliant way you went about it, when you said compliant earlier, that comment, I think allows us to point to many different regulations that may need clarity in the future to what Stephen's saying. That's my two cents.
Well, what you're saying is that by saying minimally necessary, it focuses on HIPAA. There may be other considerations. So maybe the language is understanding barriers to sharing the appropriate subsets of
HIPAA. Right. And that's right.
Includes HIPAA, but also includes
FERPA and others. Yeah, that's right. That's the way I would see it.
Good point.
That's fair.
So you all are saying that the precedent that comes with minimally necessary or minimum necessary is only with HIPAA?
I think that's where that term came from.
That word came from HIPAA. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't like clinical. I guess compliant. I've worked with some great public health folks in my state, but I tell you what, they want more. If they could have, I want some more. And I hear what Jim's saying, like they don't want a big tome of data, and that 100% agree with that. But I also feel like they just want more, and they don't think about how it's gathered. They don't think, and I'm painting a broad brush. I understand this is not, you know, 100% true across the board, but I'll give you a real life example. So we had some telehealth parity law go into play before the pandemic hit. And literally a month before it was to go into effect, Medicaid says, our state Medicaid office says, we need the provider to enter this ambulance code. And they wanted the ambulance. I mean, as a provider, I didn't know what an ambulance code was. But it's basically saying where the service was rendered both.
Oh, it's a side of service. Oh, it's a side of service code. Yeah.
And then I asked simple questions like, do our EHRs even, there are 52 that are in the state of Kentucky, do we even have the ability to enter that? But I asked, like, what are you trying to get out of this? Well, we just think it'd be an interesting academic approach to see where we're getting care and where we're delivering care. And I'm like, you're asking the end user to do something else, and you don't even know if the capability is there. And they're good people. Please understand, but that's just a micro example of the minimum necessary strikes very hard and sound with me. But if you guys think that maybe compliant would cover the same thing but allow a little bit broader understanding, I'm fine.
I like the broader understanding and the, you know, I think
all right. So I think we have agreement on compliant, Michelle. Does that make sense to you?
Can somebody read back now what you're thinking?
So basically, understand barriers to sharing compliant, well, clinical data in a compliant manner or something to that effect. I'm saying this too wordy, but that's what we're trying to get at, which is sharing data, but being mindful of the regulations that are there. So it used to be minimum necessary, now it's in a compliant manner, however we word that.
Well, would you like to include parenthetically, e.g. minimum necessary under HIPAA?
That would help.
Good idea. So then know what we're referencing. Without limiting it to that.
Yeah, yeah, as an EG instead of exclusively.
That's fair.
Yeah. Make sense, Michelle?
Yes, that's good, thanks.
Perfect, all right.
We're just saying appropriate, just want to clarify that. We're not saying appropriate, just the compliant piece.
Compliant.
Okay, got it.
Yes, ma'am. All right, next one here with Hans. Again, some more vernacular here. Reducing silos in data exchange by exploring the roles of HIAs and other data exchange network. Okay, that's fair. In promoting the interoperability of public health data and clinical data systems. That's fair.
Is networks the right word, or should we use networks and frameworks?
Framework.
I mean, if you just use the word frameworks, it subsumes the networks that are part of the framework.
Right, right.
That's the way we use the language. You could say networks/frameworks.
Yeah, you could. I like that. I like that. I do like that, Stephen, because I don't know if a lot of people will understand the subordinate hierarchy that you're just referring to, but you're right. But if we say both, think that's a fair yeah. comment. Okay.
Again, we always want to support the opportunity for HIEs to add value and, you know, help be part of the solution for sure.
Yeah, precisely.
Well, one question about that, you know, when we say we always, right? So we have these HIEs that are now, and there may come a time when the data is such and the fire is such that the HIE nouns as data aggregators become unnecessary, right? That there may in fact be apps. If you look at Health Gorilla, their goal is to be, they've stated their CEO, they want to become the source of truth for the longitudinal record for patients in the US. So you can imagine a world where the HIE nouns are something our grandkids are looking back on in history lessons.
So maybe.
I don't want to say HIE nouns aren't going to be important, but do you want to add wording that deliberately doesn't just focus on HIE nouns, but also other potential?
Well, you could say HIEs, comma, and other health apps. Data utilities and other.
Yeah, we need to stay with the HIE nomenclature because it is written in 21st Century Cures and others. They do reference it, right? So we need to stay true to what's there, agreeing with you where it's going, Jeff.
Do an and then. HIE yeah. and, because if we're just myopically focused on the nouns, we may miss the opportunity.
Fair point. And other data aggregators or whatever you want to call it, right? Yeah. Three. Yeah, that's a fair point. That's fair. And with all respect to the companies like Health Gorilla and others, you know, they're doing great work. Although I've heard many people say they want to be the aggregator, Experian, others, and not to talk about vendors, but there's a whole lot of hope. So,
well, what we're saying is, as the data gets more and more machine understandable, and these interfaces occur, the marketplace for the yeah. those apps is actually
right.
Very likely to actually occur. But anyway.
It's, you know, if you use that term health data utility, which seems to be more and more in vogue, in my mind, it could include organizations that function as HIEs today and provide utility services. And it could include those aggregators you were describing, or, you know, Health Gorilla type organizations that also provide utility services. So leveraging the terminology health data utility, I think it ends up being more inclusive. So I'd add that HIEs, health data utilities, and other data exchange frameworks, because then you're getting at the, you know, the care quality, you know, the yeah. subservient or the component networks, and also direct trust, you know, which sort of provides its own network/framework yep. for interoperability.
Yeah, we want to be inclusive. I think that's our point. So, Michelle, is that clear as mud?
So we're going to add in health data utilities, yep. and we're going to add in the word frameworks. Can be
right. networks. So rules of HIEs, yeah. comma, health data utilities, comma, and frameworks.
Data and exchange. Other. I would say data exchange networks and frameworks.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that covers the waterfront.
Michelle, good?
I believe so.
All right. Okie doke. Next one from Hans. Written comment here on gaps in public health. This is related to ELR, electronic laboratory reporting. There seems to be three areas of inconsistency where terminology appears to be least variant, other than which tests are reportable, less variations in codes itself. There are variations in use of HL7B2 syntax. That's correct. Increased alignment on federal standard to start, then deviations in already common data. Varying approaches for additional data that should not be part of ELR, or where it should or could be done the same by all. This gets really, really deep. And when we stood up to CLIA certified labs to do it ourselves, we realized this quickly, the inconsistencies that were there. But I mean, this goes, I appreciate what ONC is like. Yeah, well, this should be a separate topic altogether, like next year to talk about, because this is deep.
What is this trying to say?
I'll be honest.
Hey, one more time, Brad. I'm sorry.
I said it's too deep for me. I'm out.
Is this trying to say that we need to address the variation?
I think what he's saying is that there's different syntax. And the reason why is because even like if you take COVID, for example, they were adding to as we were going along, right? Like the World Health Organization didn't even have an ICD code for COVID for like months after it was declared a pandemic. And the same thing with the vaccine shots, right? They were late to the game with that. And so it gets difficult when you're trying to link these things together with records. And I think what he's saying is, how is there not a standard approach with some sort of defined timeline or whatever else, both technical and non, so that there's sort of a general approach to how we go about this? It's difficult. Like, yeah, CLIA has certain rules, there's certain European rules. I mean, it gets deep.
So this is all about electronic lab reporting.
Yeah.
I'm trying to understand, what are the three areas of inconsistency that he's referencing?
Which tests are reportable? The variations in COSIN test. And then it looks at the third ones, the variations in use of the existing HL7 syntax. That's the way I read three. But I think what this points to is that electronic laboratory reporting needs to just be something we talk about in depth next year from all dimensions.
Okay. Now I see it. But his sentence structure leaves a little something to be desired.
Yeah, I think he was thinking as he was writing, which I get it. I do the same thing. So it's kind of like wordsmith, hurricane kind of thing. All right.
Oh, Michelle, I had a friend who used to, he referred to it. He was a journalist and an alcoholic, and he would say, write drunk, edit sober. Get your ideas down and then go back and clean it up.
So you're like, what was I thinking? Yeah. I think it's a sign of brilliance in there. All right. So Michelle, we're in agreement to table this one, but it's important. So definitely want to look at.
Okay.
All right. Next Dr. one.
Clem. Oh, yeah. Can I ask again? One of the points we made about ELR was that we have 220 some different labs that do COVID testing for us, right? You know what? You know how many of them actually report the results using a terminology standard? Zero.
Ooh.
Zero. So for one of the points I was making, I don't know if this is part of it, was how do you actually, I know OEM standards group, but is his point, how do we tighten the standards? Because the issue of how do you encourage the lab testing companies to actually utilize terminology standards, improve the use of terminology standards in EMR reporting, we weren't even seeing them try.
Right. I think it's all the above, Jim. I think it's all the above. Honestly, I think you're right. It's all the above. How do we, what's the carrot and stick to make you do it? And then if you're going to do it, what's the playbook? Right. I think it's both.
And do we have the, what will make them do it? Or is that more of a different?
I don't know. That's a good question.
Yeah. I mean, you're right. So the opportunity is not just, how do you improve the use? It's through policy and incentives, right?
That's my point is to me, that's the bigger discussion. No one's even trying that. So we're going to fine tune the syntax to something no one's even trying to do.
Well, because it's easier to find a covered entity. Come on, we all know the answer to this one. All right.
What about right, improve so and incentivize the use?
Yeah, we could. Right,
I love it.
Yep. Improve and incentivize.
That rather than parking lot at this, how about we actually propose that change for this year?
Well, we can do that, but I think that we should, this is one of those we should really look at in depth for next year, right? So I think we should still refer to it. Well, we do that in previous reports. We talk about it, then we go into much deeper conversation about it later on in the next report.
Well, the only question I have about when you say next year is, like, right now we have the CDC and others. There's a bunch of people moving forward trying to figure out the infrastructure for this exchange, right?
Right.
And states are getting money and they're hiring people. And one of the things I was saying to CDC is that we'll end up with far more sophisticated systems that are variable and don't talk to each other, right?
Yeah. Sorry, when I say this year, remember we're talking about last year's report. We're finishing up this year, right? Yeah. So sorry. So I don't mean it in literal terms. I mean it as a what happened last year to clean it up so that this year we're hitting the ground literally with this topic. So you're right, Jim. I don't mean to say it's pushed out another year. No.
Sorry about that.
No, good point, though.
No, eventually, says Aaron.
All right. Next one here from Clem. Explore his comment there in red. Explore whether there are data needs versus we're saying explore the data needs. Okay. I mean, for missing long COVID?
You're suggesting that there, we're not sure there are gaps.
I mean, there are gaps. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
let's just be honest.
Yeah, right.
We have major issues right now documenting this.
There's no data on long COVID, right?
respectfully declined his edit.
Yeah. Some interesting studies just came out. I saw one in preprint just today, you know.
I'm perplexed.
This was the Seattle piece.
You could say explore what the data needs for existing programs are, right? So if we say that might be the wrong word, but they are. Right. We're not saying they're not. They don't exist, but they could be varying data issues. I could agree with that.
Yeah, I think you're right. In other words, and that'll change over time. So, explore how to support the varying data.
Something like that. Yeah, something like that. Whatever that right word is. Go ahead.
I was just gonna say, what does the word programs refer to?
I think research programming, my fiance is in charge of a bunch of research at Mandy and COVID.
Yeah.
So there are programs in place that are focusing on understanding long COVID syndrome or understanding, you know, later.
And there's long COVID clinics coming up too, right? So you're seeing a lot of health systems launch that for large patients that is specific for that, treating chronic illness. It's basically chronic condition comorbidity clinic where you're, you know, you had COVID and you have multiple issues that are persisting. We have a small one here in Florida, but I know of other areas that have very large ones.
So I think we're rejecting the suggestion of whether there are data needs.
Yeah, I disagree with the notion that there potentially is not. There is issues, period. There's gaps. There's tons of gaps.
Yeah. So ONC, Michelle, you guys recommended accepting this change, but it sounds like we're suggesting otherwise.
Right.
Yeah, you have the right to do that. I think our thinking was that, first of all, trying to find a compromise, but also he was trying to say that are the gaps different than for other diseases? I think you're saying from your work experience that, yes, you are seeing something that's new and different here gap.
What's an example of a data gap you're seeing that isn't represented in a terminology?
Yeah.
You know one? Because to me, it maybe like cough, or someone has weakness or fatigue, It may be that the data is there.
It's just incorrectly coded. Yeah. Well, I mean, long COVID wasn't even an ICD code for the longest time, right? It just came out a few months ago. So I'm sure there's tons and tons of people that were documented records, chronic condition, thinking, oh, you just have, you know, emphysema or something. But in fact, it's long COVID. I'm just making that up.
Yeah. How about the 270 plus labs that aren't reporting to Jim the results?
Yeah, right.
Right. Well, there is another key data element, you know, related to long COVID in particular is duration of illness and duration of symptoms. And that's actually not in USCDI. You know, that's seems to me a data gap or data need if we're talking about, you know, a chronic or subacute version of an otherwise acute illness. I think there, you know, that's why I say, what do we know about long COVID? I mean, we don't have standardized data to capture that.
Well, you got to get a standardized definition to begin with, right? And then then work on the data. I don't feel like we've got that yet.
It's hard to know what they mean, to be honest with you, right? Like I posted somewhat humorously in the chat, this recent news about the gut microbiome being a cause of long COVID, right? So I play.
Well, and associate, you know, it's been found to be associated in pretty rigorous study, right?
But what I'm saying is that, does that mean like, hey, do we have data representations to, is there some data need that's not covered right now that's gonna come out of this, right? You know, is that what they mean?
I think you know, what we said, explore the data needs.
Yeah.
And existing programs. I think conflating needs and programs in one sentence is a little confusing.
Is it the data needs of existing programs?
Oh. I think if we go back to the genesis of what we were trying to say, we're on agreement that there are existing gaps. And so it's really, what is it? We don't know, right? We don't know what they are because it's so varying.
What if you flipped it around? What if you explored existing programs and data needs? That makes a little bit more sense to me.
Okay. I can get behind that.
Sure.
Here, here.
Yeah, okay, there we go. That's your answer, Michelle.
Okay, that works for us, thanks.
Perfect. All right, next one for Mr. Hans. Okay, so this one's health IT gaps, public health, information exchange to facilitate care, the opportunities to improve clinical documentation standards for patients with long COVID has a blueprint for conditions. So his says was, would be good topic to, I guess this would be a good topic to understand whether this is the new flavor of initial, electronic initial case report, or investigative queries or something new.
Here again, I think long COVID is something new. Again, it's this subacute to chronic manifestation of an otherwise acute disease. I mean, the EICR is specifically the initial case report. Investigative queries, I think he's referring to case investigation. So certainly part of understanding long COVID might be public health entities querying providers or patients or payers for additional data regarding this disease episode. Improve clinical documentation standards for patients with long COVID and as a blueprint for other conditions. So ONC recommended putting this on the list of topics for this coming year.
I thought he meant that this could be a model for the next pandemic that comes up. How do we, what processes do we have in place to be agile as our data needs evolve? And I thought he was saying that we should, you know, view this as a new flavor of electronic use case when new items emerge in public.
Yeah. So if I could propose, it sounds like the reason why ONC is saying, hey, let's talk about this is let's actually go through this, you know, with the previous one that we just talked about, figure out what it is, right? What, if anything, and then we could determine from the gaps, what could we do with it?
Yeah.
And it is, you know, it is a model that I don't think we've talked a lot about, this notion of an acute illness transitioning into a chronic illness. You know, I'm thinking of Lyme disease, right? I mean, a lot of Lyme disease is acute and simple and it moves along and some people end up getting stuck with chronic Lyme symptoms. And there are other, you know, similar examples where you've got this differentiation between acute and chronic disease that you know, may well have the same ICD code.
Right.
Well, you have the model I'm thinking of, you know, severe pneumonia in childhood leading to bronchiectasis later that's a chronic disease, right? There's few of those.
For sure.
Okay.
Anyway, I know we can move on. To me, it seemed like what he was trying to say is, can we use this long COVID thing as a model for how we systematically support new clinical entities that emerge with data standards, et cetera? That's how I read it.
But I would agree. I think we should table this one. I think it's important, but we should find out more, right? Mm-hmm. I think we should define this better. All right. So everybody's in agreement. Let's go to the next one here from Arian. All right. If you can scroll down Excel so I can see the comment here. There we go. All right. Interoperability, patient matching, recommend a high-tech activity, define a core standard data set of elements, support patient matching across health systems, including demographic, proposed by ONC revision, define governance best practices at registration and other relevant collection points to improve the data quality of the core data set, standard data set of elements as defined in USCDI and Project USAT. To support patient matching across the health system. All right, this is more specificity.
Well, it specifically calls out Project USA, which seems appropriate at this point. Now, when you talk about best practices at registration,
other
relevant collection points, that's great. I don't know what the word governance is doing there.
Yeah. It's just best practices.
I think it's best practices. Governance.
Yeah, I would strike the word governance. I don't see that. I'm missing something. Brett, do you see it a different way?
I do not.
Yeah. Michelle, I think we're in agreement. Just strike the word governance.
Okay. So say just define best practices.
Yeah.
But I mean, certainly in his, and I don't support the governance piece, but in his spoken comment, the recommendation can be tailored to address the governance for data collection at registration. I don't know how you do that. How many different?
Well, I guess he may be thinking operationally at the whatever site is collecting this data.
Yeah, make sure you get this data from everyone.
How do you assure that it happens?
Like for us, we resort to some biometrics for all our numerous sites to make sure that we're gathering the correct proper demographics every single time on registration you present. So when you show back up, you're scanning your palm, boom, information is there again. So we're trying to standardize it that way for all the millions of patients that we have, but everybody's different. So if he's going for that, and
what we're referring to here really is the data elements in Project USA, and assuring that they're collected appropriately, documented appropriately, maintained, you know. I would just leave out the word governance.
Yeah. Okay. All right, so let's go to the next one then from Hans. Interoperability, information blocking. All right, written comment. Should there be summary reference in this table to the focus on USCDI, USCDI plus, EHI, EPHI? I think we need some more letters in that one, to be honest with you. As a key area of interop standards, focus to grow into. Revision from to the recommended high-tech data proposed by OT. Convene a listening session to assess the establishment of measures of the impact of the information blocking requirements rule, the ONC Cures Act Final Rule, including the transition from USCDI to the full scope of electronic health information across the industry's conjunction efforts, ONC measurement efforts. Yeah, that's all those.
I really appreciate the suggested edit on the part of ONC.
Yeah.
Because that's really what so many of our groups have been asking for some time. I don't know that it exactly gets at Hans' question, but he was asking this question last year as well. Summary reference in this table. Key area of interrupts to grow into. Yeah, I don't quite get what he's saying, but I really like the edit.
Yeah, the edit's good.
The murkiness that comes with USCDI, USCDI plus, and then what's being expected with EHI, is he saying there ought to be a listening session so we can be more deliberate about how we transition from USCDI to full EHI? Stephen, this gets back to our gap analysis, and is there work to do to close the gap on machine understandable differences between USCDI and EHI? Yeah.
I mean, if you take the AHIMA list for EHI, which is what kind of we used as our sort of starting point and starting to look at it, right, and crosswalk where are the elements, make sure you can get them. It's amazing what one calls it the other, right? So as you make this happen to the point of it, this should cover it, I would think. Get to that transition you were just talking about, Jim.
I think so, because we're all going to be, I mean, proof's in the pudding. We're all going through that AHIMA, EHRA and stuff list to figure out where we're going to use the feasibility exception, right? That's large, you know, what data do we actually have?
Right.
What data do we have, but it's going to take a huge lift until the EHR and other vendors actually make it externalizable, right?
That's right. And the EHR vendors, literally telling us, we don't know. And we have no idea if we'll even make the date. That's literally what we're being told.
And to me, that there's a hunger for a pathway. Right. And we have the EHI, and so maybe, I think if that's what he's talking about here, being deliberate about, okay, what's next?
But let's be clear. October is around the corner and it's February basically. So I keep telling our partners and vendors, hey guys, I cannot wait till July and August to start this. If you say that's too bad, we don't know. So anyways, all right, let's keep going. I digress.
That's feasibility exception is what that means.
Yeah, that's exactly. You got to show the work to be able to claim that, but yes. All right, Hans here, target area. Where are we? The interoperability one, right? Number 7 here? Yeah.
Good health.
All right. Yeah, should health equity be a topic on its own as it evolves? What data is best captured where needed? Okay, so this is about increasing health equity across population situations. So should discuss, it was a broad standalone topic in our ability target area, right? So the report will focus on certain subtopics. ONC recommends placing the suggestion on a list of potential topics for consideration FY22 annual report. I thought health equity was like a major focus for the high tech this year. Maybe I'm wrong.
I thought it was too, but there's a difference between just calling it health equity, right? What ONC's role is to figure out what data is important to support health equity efforts. Am I misunderstanding it? Because health equity has to be addressed at far beyond just the data, right? But are we looking at for health equity at what data elements are necessary? Is that what, because should health equity be a topic? Well, that's apple pie, health equity, of course. Who's gonna not want health equity? But we're talking about the data and standards, right? Is that what it means?
The way that Hans put it is, what data is best captured where? How do we share it? Where is it needed?
Yeah.
To support, specifically to support health equity.
Yeah.
You know, and is this, you know, SDOH? Is this, you know, race and ethnicity? What is the data that supports equity?
Which I think is why ONC is saying, let's talk about it in this upcoming report and really break this down to sections, which I could see that.
Yeah.
This is another very deep topic. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So postpone it till this coming year.
This year.
Yeah.
All right. Let's keep going. We're getting closer to time here, and we've got 7 to go. All right. Interoperability, standards, priority, use cases, closer referrals. Goodness. All right. Should this be more general around integrated clinical and administrative workflows, such as closer referral, e-prior auth, cost transparency, good faith estimates? Wow. As written, this particular follow-up was identified by the HITACH through its ISP task force in 21. ONC placed in the suggestion. Yeah, this is not a big one. It's important, but this isn't something we can just solve.
Agree.
Yeah, closed loop referrals is one piece of a bigger puzzle.
Yeah. Okay. So we agree with you, ONC, on the steps for this one. All right, Mr. Ike. See, now I'm gonna start calling that with his comment here.
You skipped one.
Oh, did I? Oh, apologize. Sorry. Hans. Yep, Hans. Sorry. We'll go privacy security first. Sorry about that. So do we need to consider privacy and consent directives to support that at a national level? There are various initiatives in flight, recent LEAP funding, et cetera, to initiatives, data segmentation. Wow. Alignment of innovation and regulation. Yeah, this is not an easy answer either. I hate to keep kicking the can, but it's true. These are big topics.
Yeah, but aren't these, just out of quick question here, we're talking about privacy and consent directives. Is that something that, Sequoia? Is that something that HITACH should try to independently solve, or is that something that has to be rooted in sort of the workflows? Because I would expect Kafka, the Sequoia would help us with that.
I don't think it's on the front burner for TEFCA.
Well, I read that to mean, how do we, like, privacy and consent directives, what does that mean?
What I would say is, I think you're right, Jim, and that we actually don't know what the answer is, what the right answer is there, and that we need to look at this, and I would say talk to OCR and get their take on some of this.
Well, for example, let me make sure I understand. When a patient decides to, quote, opt out, well, we're waiting for Sequoia to tell us what that looks like. And is that opt-out encounter? Is that what this is talking about?
Yeah.
Or is that different?
Well, I think when you talk about consent directives, it is about opting in, opting out of exchange, either, you know, broadly or at the episode level or the visit level or the result level. Opt out of release of data related to STIs. I mean, it could look lots of different ways, right?
Yeah, I think we should put this on the list for next year and double click on it to get these answers. I don't think we're gonna be able to answer it here.
Agree.
Okay.
Next one here, patient access to information. This is Ike. All right. There is not as much attention to the roles of individual patients, people, especially, thank you.
especially in managing and understanding who has access to data and what circumstances, need greater accountability on where, to whom, and why individuals' information is released. You're here. I think there are a variety of policy levers that can be used to achieve that goal, some of which would be significant impact on supporting research. So,
To comment from me, I agree with ONC. It is really important because as we have information blocking rules,
yeah,
our ability to even audit why did someone release my data to so and so is going to be really important. But it's this year's work though.
That's right. Any dissenting to that, Stephen and Brett? You good?
No, that makes sense. It does make me think. Sorry, there's some noise here, so I'm going on and off mute. There is the accounting for disclosures requirement under HIPAA, and one wonders whether there might be a need or an opportunity to revisit that. You know, under what circumstances can an individual request an accounting for disclosures, and what kinds of disclosures need to be accounted for? Mm-hmm. HIPAA was written a long time ago, right? And in a paper world, in fact. So I think that's probably part of this discussion, but I agree this should be tabled and brought back next round.
Okay. Scroll down, please. Let's see. Illustrative stories. Okay. We've got some red text here. So revision. In the past, the agency has encountered clinicians who are hesitant to send their patients' medical records as identity. However, clinical data sets have become better defined and bidirectional exchange has improved. Do we agree? Well, yeah, I mean, this is the story of what happens when we actually get this right, right? Am I reading this right? The past agencies of kind of clinicians who are hesitant, et cetera, yes.
I think this is referring to the EICR, particular, where we've specified the data set for ELR, for syndromic. So it's true that in the past, clinicians were hesitant. And now this does feel safer, I think, to clinicians as these standards have evolved. So this is asking for a new federal educational initiative. There was one, has helped clinicians. So this goes back to the minimum necessary topic we were discussing earlier. Okay. I think the additional text is fine.
I don't quite understand. Is he just fine tuning to be true, to be accurate?
There's no. And I think he's giving us a little bit of credit for the hard work that's been done.
Okay, yeah.
I vote for credit to be given.
Credit is done. All right. Let's keep going then. Next one. All right, here we go. So study stories. I think there are a wealth of other examples that are demonstrating the blockability. Standards impact public health, demonstrated further refinement improvements. Workgroup has offered to reach out to public health colleagues to solicit stories for alternative ideas.
Find that a bit ironic. There's a plethora of stories. I know somebody who knows some of them. I don't remember what story he's referencing, I'll be honest.
I need more clarity. I don't know what Steve's a smart guy, so he's got to have some specific in his mind.
Yeah, why don't we ask him?
Well, the way I read this is things happened over the past couple of years where we were able to pivot and provide standards that positively impacted public health, therefore giving us the confidence that further refinements and improvements can also have.
Yeah. So, Michelle, can we ask Steve to clarify, because now we're getting close to time, clarify via email some specificity? We want to listen to him, but I mean, if he could write it up and give us some specifics, I think we can get to goal on this one quickly via email.
Right. And I did do that with him, but he didn't follow up this last week in a timely way. So he had promised some stories. I'm not trying to call him out here. I think he got busy and was going to reach out to some colleagues and they were busy. So it didn't really come to fruition, but it was kind of, he's throwing it out there of like, help you write it. And meanwhile, I helped find, a solution that works with what we already had.
Yep.
And I don't think there's pressure anymore to do that, but he's still willing to if you want.
Well, let's just offer one more time, and if nothing for next year, right? We can always incorporate what he finds for next year so that his voice starts. I know he's a new member of the team, so I can appreciate the overwhelming amount of information it is. So, all right. All right. I think on these ones, ONC will consider these edits. These are just, I think these are just administrative. Is that right, Michelle?
Yeah, I just had to reach out internally to get approval to make the requested changes or not.
Yeah, USCDB at V1 from specificity. It's nothing. Okay. I don't see anything here that's wonky. Okay. Any issues?
Sounds good.
Yeah, I think this is just more finesse. Next section. Let's scroll. Is that it?
That's it.
My goodness gracious. All right, we're at point for public comment now, I think. Is that right? Mike?
Sure, we can go to public comment.
Do it.
All right. There we go. So if you are on Zoom and you would like to make a comment, please use the hand raise function, which is located on the Zoom tool, the toolbar at the bottom of your screen. If you are just dialing in only on the phone, press *9 to raise your hand. And once called upon, press *6 to mute or unmute your line. Let's see if we have any comments. And I do not see any, but we'll leave this up for a few minutes and give it back to you, Aaron.
Okay, good. All right.
I think we skipped over a comment for Hans. If we go back to that last page, page 9, the written comment, curious as to why additions to CCDA guidance were not included. So I think we kind of skipped over that.
Wait, I missed it. Where?
Just that top line that's showing on the screen, written comment, curious as to why additions to CCDA were not included. And I think the point he's making is that the EICR exists within the clinical document architecture. And getting ECR off the ground involved, you know, a lot of people enabling their systems to generate an EICR to send through the APHL AIMS platform, you know, to public health. So he doesn't have a suggestion the way he does in the line below, but so I'm not sure exactly what he's referencing.
Yeah, we can ask him.
There was clearly something on page 12 that he, you know, he just thought there could be an acknowledgement of the work that was done.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Yeah, it'd be good to maybe, Michelle, just go back and see what he was pointing at there and whether there's an opportunity to acknowledge the CCDA work.
Yeah.
That was all.
Right. And it's in the ONC activities. So it's kind of tied to ONC's work directly. It's one reason I'm asking some leadership at ONC if they want to cover it here or not.
Got it. Okay. Perfect. Yeah. Awesome. I just didn't see which edit you were suggesting.
Awesome.
But yeah.
Okay. Well, I appreciate you catching that, Stephen. Thank you. I did not see that. So thank you. Good eye. Good eye, sir. I have a trained surgeon, skilled surgeon or physician. So good. All right. I think with that.
I think we're good. I'm going to go make myself some coffee.
Yeah. Mike and others, are we okay to adjourn 5 minutes early?
Yeah, sure. We definitely are. So thank you, everyone. Appreciate your time today.
Have a good one. Cheers. Stay safe.
See you soon.
Thanks, guys.